This is Megan Shoemaker, and you're listening to Free, the podcast, where together we can explore how to design our lives more in line with our values, and as a result, find our own personal freedom, so that we can live a life full of purpose, fun, adventure, and wonder. Let's get ready to feel more free. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. And thanks so much for being here and sharing your time with me. This feels like a special episode for me in a lot of ways, because today I feel like I'm coming out of the spiritual closet. My guest today is this amazing, funny, talented, and just overall lovely person. And we're going to be talking about her healing journey, the Akashic Records, getting in tune with your spiritual gifts, and so much more. This is kind of a touchy subject for me, if I'm being honest, because there's still that one part of me that worries about what other people think and how this is going to be received. I love the idea that there's a higher purpose to our lives, that there are other dimensions and guidance available to us and other forces that are at work that we can't fully explain by science at this point. I realize fully that I don't know the full truth, but I feel in my heart that these ideas are something to be explored. Besides, don't you love a good mystery? There's so much in this world that's unexplained. Why are we here? How does evolution really work? Why does my right armpit smell so much worse than my left? And what is that one thing that meatloaf absolutely will not do for love? Like, really, where does that guy draw the line? These are only some of the important questions that I ponder. But I'm coming to realize that I like the mystery of it all. There's still so much in this world that we don't know, and we'll probably never fully understand, but that's part of the fun in it, isn't it? If we knew everything, there would be no joy in the discovery. There would be no learning new things, of understanding there might be a bigger picture. Several years ago, I learned about people who believe that they're able to channel higher energies, and I thought it was interesting and exciting. And I found that when I could separate my fear over how the messages were being delivered, that I really resonated with the love and the neutrality in the message. I thought this ability was only given to the chosen few, and then I learned that intuition is something that can actually be cultivated. Not only that, but that there's something called the Akashic Records that anyone has access to and can tap into this higher wisdom virtually anywhere, anytime. And that is exactly how I found Kat, today's guest. I've been somewhat secretly developing my own gifts with her help and her guidance. And that was after I got an Akashic Records reading from her. And I knew this was something that I wanted to be able to do. So we're going to talk about what it is in the episode, so I won't spoil all of the surprises, but essentially she tapped into the entire history of my soul and gave me just a bigger picture understanding of some of the challenges and the emotions and the patterns that I've been living and reliving. And I found just so much healing and compassion for myself that I decided I was going to take both her beginners and her advanced Akashic Records reading classes. When we recorded this episode, I had only been through the first course, but I will say both were incredible experiences for me. And I came out of them with a new group of spiritual seekers as friends, because she just created such a beautiful, nurturing, and safe space for us to learn and explore and essentially heal. And so I'm curious to know what you, the audience, is thinking right now. Are you intrigued like I am? Are you casting it off as nonsense and woo-hoo-ery? Well, before you do, think about this. In a 2017 survey from the Pew Research Center, they found that 90% of Americans believe in God or some other higher power or spiritual force. 84% of the global population identifies with a religious group. And that doesn't include people with spiritual beliefs that don't believe in a specific religion. It's like we're hardwired toward believing in something. Something beyond ourselves. Like some unseen force that can't be proven. That's mind-blowing to me how many of us can just keep this kind of faith, even as our worlds are sometimes, they seem like they're falling apart. I don't know. That fascinates me to no end. Maybe I'm watching too much X-Files lately because I very much identify with Spooky Mulder. You know, I really want to believe. And it just helps make sense out of the senseless, which, let's be frank, there's a lot of senseless going on right now. So let's talk about the records. The word Akasha is actually a Sanskrit word meaning primary substance out of which all things are formed. In Linda Howe's book, How to Read the Akashic Records, she quotes from several sacred texts, including Jewish and Christian Bibles, who allude to the record stating, your record, they call it the book or the book of life, and she infers that these texts are all referring to the same Akashic Records. In my opinion, this feels like an age where many of us are looking to take our power back and are rediscovering wisdom that's been suppressed or lost to us over time. So if this is brand new to you or challenges your ways of thinking, I think that's something to celebrate. And if it's not your thing, that's totally okay too. I picture many of you who know me are probably thinking, I've kind of gone bananas. And that's also okay too. But for the rest of you, I can't wait for you to meet Kat Barker. And she shares her story. She introduces us to her world of healing and the Akashic Records and how she went from improv comedian to embarking on a spiritual journey and becoming a healer and how she melds her gifts as a comedian, a writer, a teacher, a healer, and everything in between. So I hope this conversation expands your mind a little bit, like it did for me. So, yeah, if you don't mind just starting by saying your name and telling people a little bit about who you are and what you do, and sure. Then we'll kind of jump into your story.
Sure. So my name is Kat Barker, and I am an intuitive, and I'm a healer. I do shamanic healing. I also do cranial sacral healing, and I'm an Akashic Records reader. And that's kind of on my spiritual side. And then I also have a creative life as well, and grew up in some ways in the Chicago improv community. And so I'm an improviser and a storyteller and a writer.
That's a
lot of things.
There's
a lot of different things that I do.
Yeah. And they don't seem like they relate all that well, but I guess the improv part is really interesting to me. Like, I don't put those two things together.
You know, I wouldn't either, except for I'll say that improv, like being able to be an improviser on stage, I think is the art of getting your body calm enough to actually, I have an experience of channeling through what I do. So I'm on stage and it's as if the thoughts are not my thoughts. And I have the same thing when I do intuitive work. So in some ways, they feel very similar to me, even though they feel like worlds apart at the same time.
Right. That does make sense, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you the improv stuff first? Or
I did.
Was it kind of, okay.
I was always a seeker. So I was always into spirituality from a very young age. And I've had this weird thing where I feel like people have approached me my entire life to want to give me intuitive readings. So The interesting part is I was working at a flower shop just right out of college in a terrible relationship and not knowing what I wanted to do next. And I'd gone and gotten a theater degree in LA and had been totally overwhelmed by the business there. And I was like, I don't think I can go audition all the time. I don't think I have the wherewithal to be able to withstand all of the rejection that's needed in an environment like that. So I was working at this flower shop. This woman came in and offered me an intuitive reading. And she gave me this reading that blew my mind at the time. And she told me, she was like, you're going to move to the middle of the country and you're going to start performing. And so what's interesting is that the thing that got me to Second City in Chicago was actually an intuitive reading. So, and then I became an improviser. So that was all within the first year out of college, and then fell in love with improv very deeply. Loved it. In some ways, I had always tried to make sense of myself as a performer in terms of being an actor. And it never quite felt like these are my people, especially musical theater people. I was like, I don't know if these are my people at all. And I ended up getting to Chicago and being immersed with people who were truly very, very funny and quick and smart. And there was an entire community there. And I just loved it. And I loved, as much as it terrified me, I loved the terror too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of relate to that just because I always have this part of me that holds myself back, but I also seek experiences all the time that make me want to throw up a little bit.
Yeah.
So
I used to equate that. I had gone on a river rafting trip when I was, in my early 20s. And my sister is very naturally fearless and loves jumping out of planes. And we'd been on this whitewater rafting trip and she decided to cliff jump 50 feet off the side of a rock.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, I have to do that too. Like, I'm going to do this. And I got up to the top of the rock and just cried. Cried and cried and cried. And then finally jumped. And I feel like that's my experience of everything. It's like, I'm terrified and I'll still do it.
Yeah.
Or at least that was my 20s, is like pushing myself beyond my fear.
Yeah. Yeah. That's me too. You know, yeah. I'm standing at the top of the Black Diamond Mountain Hill, like trying not to cry, but also not really having a choice because I took the lift up there and I have to get down.
Totally. I have a really funny story about skiing too. Of course, my sister is a snowboarder. So, and she taught snowboarding right out of college. And I went skiing once, only once, I think when I was 12 years old. And I had what was in fashion at the time, these very tight ski pants that I feel like were like legging ski pants.
Yeah, yeah.
And I, first of all, didn't understand how to ski. So it's me going down the side of the slope, totally out of control. I can't slow myself down. And these pants are slowly falling down the entire time. So they're like down by my ankles by the time that I end up at the bottom of the hill and straight into like an older woman having a skiing lesson. And then the guy who was giving her the lesson was like, if you can't get in control of yourself, you're not allowed to ski the slopes. And I was like, I'm never skiing the slopes again anyways. So sad.
That is sad. But you gave that woman a really exciting story.
I know,
pantsless,
right?
Girl,
it just
ran me down.
Her.
Oh, anyways, yeah, I can relate. My very first ski lesson, and we'll move on, but I fell and got tangled up in the orange fencing that they have and just was sitting there crying, it's my birthday.
Oh, no.
But I did it again, so it's all good.
Good for you.
Yeah, yeah. But you said that you have always been interested in spirituality. Mm-hmm. So was your family really spiritual or is it just random?
It's funny. My family is not really spiritual. I did grow up in Northern California, so there was an openness to it. Mm-hmm. And my parents, lived in San Francisco during the 60s and 70s. So in some ways, they were hippies and not hippies at the same time. So there was an openness there. But I also, my mom is a therapist. And so there was a lot of, and she was getting her PhD while I was growing up. So she started getting it when I was 2. So there was a big introduction to healing very early on. So the idea of, and to be honest, it was a little bit detrimental because I don't think you can have a child do that level of self-analysis on themselves well, not the same way that an adult can. But I became very interested in that. And also, had a little bit of an arm's distance to it at the same time too, because it felt overwhelming. I think it's part of the reason that I wanted to go into comedy is like, just get me away from this. And also deeply drawn to that aspect of what does it mean to do deeper work on ourselves. And then I got interested in it around 16 years old. It was like I started reading a lot of New Age books. And so that was, it's an, my initial gateway into it. And I would kind of play around, but it wasn't. And then I had that first intuitive reading that led me to Chicago. And then my sister actually ended up going to grad school. And one of her closest friends there, her mother was an intuitive. And I got a really life-changing reading from her. So that brought me back in. And so I think in my late 20s, in kind of that Saturn returns period, I started to take a much deeper dive into that work. And also my life was falling apart at the same time.
Why does that always go together?
it's always an initiator, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, my life, you know, I really deeply wanted to succeed in improv and had had a lot of success in it. I was working for Second City. I was teaching for them and also bumping up against all of my fear because I have a lot of fear inside of me, and which I think is generational too. My mom has a lot of trauma. I think that that got passed down. So I'm bumping up against my perfectionism. There's a couple of things that fall apart in my life, specifically around improv. I lost a team that I was performing on. We got cut on the schedule. And I just found, I was like, I'm not navigating this well. I am so fearful that somehow I'm not enough, that any marker, anything that happens in my life that feels like it proves that, which is just normal life in general, I feel like I fall apart at. And so I'm caught in my own perfectionism because in my mind, it's like, if I don't get this, then I don't deserve this over here, then I'll never make it over here. And there was a certain point that I hit in my own career. I remember actually the exact moment because I gotten headshots done, and that's the place that a lot of my perfectionism can show up. It's a little bit dysmorphic in my thinking sometimes. I gotten like 400 new pictures of myself and was sitting there and like picking apart like every small detail that was in there. And it was so painful to me. It turned into almost an OCD loop for like 2 days where I was like, I'm over evaluating myself. This is my perfectionism at its most heightened state. And I remember at that moment going, oh, you know what? I really need help. More than actually even the intuitives that I see every once in a while, like I need to actually do some much deeper work on myself. And so I had been to therapists on and off throughout my life because that was the thing that we did in my family. But I decided to find a therapist in particular who I had found her on ChicagoHealers.com, which is kind of a website for like all sorts of alternative healing. And so I found her and recognized, I was like, I'm looking for someone who's not only a traditional therapist, but who incorporates spiritual modalities because I need both. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the thing that I probably should mention is I think that I really needed spirituality growing up because in all of the analysis that I had done that I grew up with in my family, it was a lot at looking at what the wounding was. I got a lot of diagnoses as a kid, you know, it's like you have depression, you have anxiety, and you have ADHD. And I don't even know if I fully had depression and anxiety. I sometimes don't know the difference between myself, my family. I talk a lot about being an empath too, which if people don't know, an empath is someone who is feeling everything that's happening. So you're hypersensitive to the external world. So a lot of the feelings that weren't processed in my family, I would process in my own body. So I constantly felt like, oh, I'm a mess. I'm falling apart a lot of the time too. And so I think spirituality started to come in a space of hopefulness of, oh, my soul is here for a larger purpose. You know, these things that I struggle with are part of my soul's choice to be here, to actually expand into who I truly am and into my power. And so I think I recognized that I needed someone who could hold both spaces so that it didn't just feel like I was going to get a lot of labeling again.
Right.
That was really important to me in my path.
Yeah. And you've been through that.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I think about that so much of the time. I think understanding in some ways what's wrong with you, it's like, oh, this is depression. I can read a list of things that compose depression on some level and understand that. But I also think too that we do a disservice with not understanding sometimes the larger reason of people's depression or anxiety, or understanding that when I talk about being an empath, those were all my intuitive gifts as well. It's not mm-hmm. just me feeling other people's wounds. It's I'm deeply intuitive. And I didn't realize that it was a gift whatsoever until I actually started training in it and realized, oh, I'm hypersensitive to the world. So all of the shame that I carry around having a lot of emotions, or, you know, feeling other people's emotions for them, or feeling overwhelmed and emotionally messy at times, that actually the more acceptance and healing I bring to myself around it, the more I actually recognize them as gifts, the more that I can give back and serve the world with them too. So I wanted the balance of both. And that was this particular therapist introduced me to not only, because I remember she said to me, she's like, you're never going to just heal yourself through your mind. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're using therapy to just analyze what you've done, you'll never get to the true trauma that's inside of the body. Like, because the body is the one that's holding the trauma. The body is the one that's holding the repressed emotion inside of it too. So if you want to heal yourself, you need to address the body. Hmm. And then you need to address the spiritual part of yourself as well. And those three together, that holistic approach is going to help you.
And when you say address the body, like, where you're holding that stuff, do you mean physical body work? Or I'm asking because, so I've been told I'm an empath several times, and I didn't believe it, I guess I want to say, because I just, even though I've been always really emotional, maybe an overreactor a lot of times, and sometimes I didn't even know why I was feeling the way I was feeling. But then I think I kind of turned that off, because I didn't want to look unprofessional, and it really bothered me. So I tried really hard to just kind of push that stuff down. But people, when I started to get into all the spiritual stuff, and I've had readings and things like that, that's keeps coming as something that it's come up several times, to the point where I feel like, okay, well, maybe I've got to look into this. And then, you know, I got a reading from you and you kind of said the same thing. And then going through and kind of looking at it, I do fit all that criteria of being an empath. But how did you let go of that stuff? Because I'm a chronic overthinker too, like overanalyzing everything. And why did I do that? And, you know, or react that way or feel that way or whatever. So yeah, can you talk more about that, those three steps you were talking about, the body work plus?
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I will also say too, part of the, for me, the recognition, it doesn't mean I have permission to like just have a meltdown when I feel like having a meltdown, but recognizing that some of the time, you know, I grew up in a household where my parents were not very emotional. So I didn't understand why my body was going through that all the time. And I'm a physical empath as well, not just an emotional empath. So I actually feel people's pain in my own body, which was very hard to understand. And there's been a big journey around healing that for myself too. So I think of my body as very sensitive. I also think of myself as a sponge. So a lot of times I'm carrying old emotional residue that's not mine, and that's generational trauma in the family. And I just happen to be more sensitive to it than other people are. And I think that we live in a society where we are taught to dissociate from our emotions. Mm-hmm. It's like the emotional body, we're here to control our emotions. you know, I think even in spirituality, a lot of times there's this idea of like spiritual perfectionism, which is I'm going to move beyond how I feel. And I think, again, with everything in balance, it's I'm going to actually feel what's coming up for me and then understand, also move back into these practices of meditation and positive thinking as well, in balance with my authentic feelings. So I'll say that because that's what I believe in. The way that I started to address it, you know, what's interesting is I have a different therapist now, and I specifically started doing somatic therapy, which was really helpful to me because somatic therapy is the idea you're slowing down the story and you're paying attention to how the body is responding. And I'll say that the somatic therapy I do now, when I first started seeing this therapist 2 years ago, I would laugh to my friends that I was like, I feel like I'm just paying someone to watch me cry the entire time. I don't even think we're in dialogue at this point. It's just me crying. But the reason that I would get to those tears so fast is because she would make me slow down my mind and my story a lot of the time and actually feel what was coming up and happening in the body. And then that would take me straight into the emotions that were there. So in some of the ways, I think we can get stuck in the analysis part. It's like slowing that way down and actually bringing presence to what's happening inside of ourselves was just really life-changing for me. That's not the first way that I went into it. The first therapist that I had went to, she introduced me to something called cranial sacral, which actually was shamanic cranial sacral, which is what I do now. But it's the idea that you have someone, a practitioner is actually working on you. So you have someone lay on a table and they use very light touch to help bring the body back into balance, to help balance the central nervous system. And the idea is when you calm the body and you bring it back into its natural state, that the trauma actually releases. And so what was fascinating to me is I would lay down on a table and all of a sudden different body parts of mine want to move. I find myself like starting to yawn or cough. Like I can actually feel energy releasing itself. And then at some point, because I'm an emotional being, I would go into crying, or there would be waves of anger that would come up. And sometimes they were really connected to, oh, this is a childhood event, or this is an event that's happened in my life that feels like it's being unlocked in my subconscious right now that I have some memory of, but now I'm actually feeling it and processing it through. Or sometimes, and the reason it was called shamanic cranial sacral was that the man who taught it to me believed that the trauma that we're holding in our bodies is not just from this lifetime, but other lifetimes as well. And so that was the really, that was really fascinating to me when I first started doing that work too, was that, I mean, it's kind of in some ways a storm of everything, right? Because it's like, oh, there's the generational trauma that we hold in our bodies. There's what's happened in this lifetime. And then there's multiple lifetimes as well. Feels like a lot to try and process.
Right.
But I loved it. That's the thing I always want to tell people about healing, is that I loved the process of healing and still love the process of healing, because there's something very cathartic to me around understanding myself, like, and actually bringing a much deeper sense of compassion to myself. And I actually like feeling feelings. I notice a lot of the time that when I'm feeling a lot of anxiety or I feel dissociated or out of body, sometimes if I actually can come back in enough and cry, it's like, that's when I actually feel best. It's like, oh, your body's just trying to process something that's happening right now. So it's medicine in some ways to teach ourselves how to work with the emotional body. And the interesting thing to me, in improv, we used to have the saying that, you know, you get two people into a scene and you figure out the who, what, and where, and then whatever is happening in the scene, you heighten it till it transforms. So it's like, if there's an emotion happening in the scene, it's like heighten the emotion, and the emotion at some point is going to transform into a new place or a new emotion. And I know that about emotions as well. It's like when we actually get to the core of experiencing the emotion, there's an emotional transformation that takes place. So a lot of times I can go from grief to feelings of deep peace or joy on the other side of it. It's the resistance to the emotions that keep us stuck in the same emotional place over and over. So that was kind of life-changing to me. And if we want to talk about any of my shamanic cranial sacral training, we can, because the comedic part of my brain loves it too. So it was, I fell in love with that almost more than I did with improv, because I just was like, this is the strangest experience I've ever had.
So like, were you experiencing your past lives, or were you just knowing that the stuff was coming from trauma or your past experiences even, or because you mentioned memories as a kid, or, you know, were these things coming up while you were getting your...
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's kind of a combination of all things. There were sometimes where just raw emotion would come up and it didn't feel tied to anything specifically. It just felt trapped in the body. Like, oh, this is just grief that needs to be felt and released. Sometimes a very specific memory would come in for me and there would be an emotion attached to that. And I was working that through. And then sometimes it didn't really start happening until I started training in cranial sacral. So I had basically been getting it done for 2 months and I lived my life very intuitively and just decided, I was like, I'm going to train in this. It was a 400-hour long training, like year-long training, which was such a deviation from everything that I had done creatively. But I was so fascinated by the work that I was like, I want to do this, not because I have any intention of ever wanting to do this professionally, but because I feel like I'll be a different person after these 400 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, it's less important to me to be a practitioner and more to heal myself. So I end up taking these classes, which are in the suburbs of Chicago, in this very, it was like these darkened rooms at this Marriott Convention Center, which to me was really funny because it's like you have all of these people processing like deep trauma, and then you have like a Little Miss pageant next door too. So you just hear like groaning and screaming from the room. So you have a whole bunch of people. The interesting thing with doing it, training in a group, is similar to when you meditate in a group too, where you can go deeper into meditation because of the collective energy. The same thing happens when you're training in something like cranial sacral. It's you lay down on the table, and if other people are getting worked on at the same time, it's like you go deeper. And so I would have these really deep experiences where all of a sudden, I would joke with my friends, I was like, I am visually seeing other lifetimes. And it's very similar to me. I've gotten hypnotherapy done before. My sister, one of the things that she does is she's a hypnotherapist. And with hypnotherapy and cranial sacral, there's an experience of, I shouldn't say and cranial sacral, I should say and shamanic cranial sacral, because a lot of cranial sacral therapists are working with the physical or the emotional and not the spiritual. And you can go see a very technical cranial sacral therapist who can help with, you know, physical pain in the body. I don't consider myself a technical cranial sacral therapist, even though we learned all the different holds. I didn't retain in that way. I retained more in the emotional spiritual. So I would tell my friends, because I was going into these other lifetimes, and I was like, well, I've either gone full crazy, which I might be, but I was like, or something very real is happening, because I'm having the same emotional release to these lifetimes that I have to like a very specific memory or incident. So that would blow my mind.
Yeah. I just started kind of looking into that past life regression stuff because I find that fascinating. And I think part of it too, it feels like, oh, well, I came into this life with these issues, so it's not really my fault. But it just seems so, I had a friend that was explaining her experience with it, and she saw all these several different lifetimes very vividly, very visually, and it just sounded incredible. And I just like doing cool things. And that just seems like a really neat experience to have.
It is. It's so funny because you're processing through emotionally what's happening at the same time. Your mind is a little bit blown that this is happening. And then to me, the other part that my comedic brain really grabbed onto was that, you know, it's like, oh, I just processed another lifetime. I had a lifetime that came up where I felt as though I was being burned at the stake. Like my whole body was on fire. So it's like you're processing and crying through that. And then, you know, all of a sudden it's over and you sit up and you're like, well, I guess we'll go hit an Applebee's for lunch. Like your brain doesn't quite know what to do with the whole process.
Well, and that sounds terrifying, actually, to feel like, do you feel like you're re-experiencing it again? Or does it seem more like you're just watching a movie? Or like, have you ever received information that you didn't feel ready for or that freaked you out or...
No, you know, everything I feel like that came up for a reason. And the interesting part about the process is that because part of my consciousness was still there, I could hear the people who are working on me still dialoguing with me and actually helping me emotionally process what had happened. It was almost like bringing care to what felt like a traumatic incident.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times, if we're talking about more... like traditional therapy, like a lot of times you're going back into what the trauma is and then you're creating a reparative experience. So that was mine. I'd never felt like, oh my God, I'm stuck in this and I'm all on my own. It felt like a cathartic release of like, oh, I can get this out of my system. Like this wants to come up and go.
Okay.
This wants to be like, instead of sitting here as a trauma in my system, there's actually a release that's happening and it's helping me reintegrate.
So you experience it from a visual and an emotional experience, but you don't feel the actual pain of being burnt at the stake.
I felt a little bit of it. I felt a little bit of it, but it didn't feel like being in horrible pain.
Okay.
It did feel like, oh, my body... It felt like a whisper of it. Like,
okay. Oh,
my body can feel this. But it was more of what I was feeling through was the terror that was in my system around it.
And so all the experiences that you would have, were you relating them also to, I think you started to say this, to something that was going on in your life now that you were experiencing maybe on a less eventful level, hopefully.
Yeah.
But
I do think that, you know, both when I read the Akashic Records or when I do this type of work, it's like there's a purpose for this specific lifetime that coming through because there is a bleed over or a simultaneous healing. It's like this is a similar issue that's come up in another lifetime. And what I think is really interesting is I don't call them past lifetimes. Call them other lifetimes because there's the idea of like linear time doesn't actually exist. So everything's happening at once. So all of our lifetimes are constantly impacting each other in some ways.
Right. Yeah. I can't wrap my head around that.
I know.
Really.
I'm trying to wrap your head around nonlinear time.
Right.
Is so hard.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and I, on a cognitive level, I get it. But when I try too hard to understand it, you know, yeah. My brain just explodes a little bit. So, but you mentioned just now the Akashic Records too, which is how I found you.
Yeah.
So what led you to that?
So I went through all this training with shamanic cranial sacral, and then I would practice. I had a couple clients, but for the most part, I was practicing on friends and didn't want to do it seriously. And then I moved to LA. This is about 5 years ago. So I ended up moving to LA with the desire to want to pursue things more creatively. You know, I had a writing partner at the time and the plan was, oh, I'm going to come out and try and sell these pilots. And I went to go to, it was a crystal shop. It was a metaphysical crystal shop when I was visiting and I was really, really drawn to this specific woman whose picture was on the wall that I was like, I want to get a reading with her. And I trust my intuition very deeply on when I get a hit of like, oh, I need this. I want to get a reading with this person. So I go in and get this reading from her, and without telling her anything about myself, halfway through, she said to me, she goes, oh, you're a healer. And I was like, well, I am, but I'm not. It's like, I had a lot of fear actually about being a healer. Even healer is a weird word, but about doing this type of work, because I really wanted to, you know, my joy is my creativity and my joy is storytelling in some ways. And so I really wanted that. I was so afraid that if I became a healer, if I was really good at this, that it would somehow take away and I couldn't have the creative side as well. So she told me, she's like, you're a great healer. And then she said, you'll work here 2 days a week. So out of the blue, she offers me this job. She's not even the one that owns the place. She goes and tells the owner, who's like, well, every couple of years, someone gets chosen for the shop. And I guess you've been chosen. So I ended up giving her the owner a healing, and she really liked it. So she hired me. And then there was an opportunity because we could take classes for a discounted price when we were there, because they would teach a lot of classes there. And the Akashic Records came up, and I was immediately drawn to it. I was going to actually take a writing class, and I decided not to take the writing class. I was like, I want to go take this Akashic Records class. So I go in and take this class and fall in love with it. I was laughing the other day. So the woman who was teaching the class at the time is my friend Helen. She became my friend. And I think I walked up to her and said, I don't think I planned to say this, but I was like, oh, I have a contract to learn from you. Like, we're going to be friends, which I think has got to be the strangest thing for someone to come up and tell you. I'd be like, no, we're not going to be friends. But she's the nicest person and was so gracious about it. And I fell in love. And it made sense to me. In some ways, again, it was like pulling together these two different worlds of, oh, here's all the healing work that I've been doing. And here in some ways is some of the improvisation. The Akashic Records should I explain what the Akashic Records are? Would that be helpful?
Yes. Explain what they are, but also explain that connection to the improv too. So sure. Start with what they are. That makes sense.
Sure. So the Akashic Records are the idea that every soul has its own vibrational record. So anything that's ever happened to the soul, every thought, deed, or action is encoded in a vibrational record. In some ways, you could say anything that happens exists. And so as an Akashic Records reader, you can open up someone's records, because each living thing, whether or not it is a tree or an animal or a person or even a creative project, all have their own individual record. So with someone's permission, you can open up their record and you can look. You're essentially in touch with their vibrational record. And because of that, you're in touch with their guides, you could say, as well. And so you can access information about the soul. And so what I was really interested in is the idea of like, well, why is my soul here? Why has it incarnated in this lifetime? What is it learning in this lifetime? Where's the resistance that's coming up in terms of trying to fulfill my highest path in this lifetime? So that's the records. And the interesting part about reading them, the part that I will connect to improv, is that a lot of times, so I think one of the reasons that I didn't fully understand that I had these spiritual gifts that I do is that there's different ways that we can bring in spiritual information. A lot of times we hear about clairvoyance. So the idea of like clear seeing. A lot of times psychics like work with talking about pictures. It's like, oh, I see this happening and I see this. So that's clairvoyance. And then there's clairaudience, which is clear hearing. And there's clairsentience, which is clear feeling. And then there's claircognizance, which is clear knowing, which is somehow I just know this. I don't know why I know this, but I know this. And I'll say that a lot of my gifts come through clairsentience. So feeling something in my body. You know, when I first started doing cranial sacral work, I would know where to go work on someone because of my high level of empathy, it was like I would hurt in my body where they were hurting in their body. And then I'd say claircognizance and clairsentience are the ones that feel a little bit like, is this me or is this information that I'm getting? It's hard to tell the difference between the two. And so a lot of times when I would open up the Akashic records, I would get a lot of messages through claircognizance. But the thing that I recognized, and when I teach the Akashic records, I teach this, is sometimes you have to actually start speaking. When you don't exactly know where you're going with it, it's like, this is the first information that's coming through. My brain wants to logically analyze it, but sometimes it gets caught in the channel. So there's times that I'm speaking before I understand what I'm fully saying, which is the exact same thing that happens in improv. It's like I'm trusting this thing that's coming through, and I'm allowing that to lead me in some ways. It's like I'm letting go. And I feel like with both, like I mentioned earlier, with both things, there's work that has to be done about learning how to calm the body enough so that the channel can come through. Because otherwise we can move into a state of fear around things, which, you know, when we're in a state of fear or hypervigilance, it's very hard to get the clear channel that comes through. So in some ways, caring for the body is like conditioning for the channel to come through.
Like a precursor you need to. Yeah. Okay.
And I think so much of the time, it'd be interesting to hear your experience with it, but I feel like so much of the time, if we're not working with the body to ground it, it's hard to understand. It's like the information gets scrambled in some ways.
Yeah. That is what has been so helpful for me with taking your class, is just hearing your explanation of these things, because I relate very much to, I think, how you receive information. And even just working, because I worked in a nursing home with people who were in physical pain, and I remember like feeling kind of like a crazy person, like, am I taking on their pain? Why am I having this? But also, just in some of my experiences with practicing with friends or friends of friends, opening their records and like feeling like, oh, I have this very deep pressure in my head right now, you know, and kind of getting that feedback of, oh, yeah, I've been having migraines for the past 3 months. Right. Or, you know, like I have a hard time I'll question what I'm getting. Why am I having this? I'll just sit there and analyze it in my brain. What's happening, or, you know, is it me? Is it them? But, you know, going through it and practicing with other people and kind of working through just trusting, you know, what's coming. And once you start, it does kind of flow. But I also have had that experience of the clutter, like too much coming through at the same time. And then what's coming out of my mouth isn't really making sense because I'm not grounded enough. And you know, so just kind of playing with it with people that I feel comfortable with has been interesting and fun. And I don't know, it's just been a fun experience, but also educational, like learning how to trust yourself, how to react, how to respond. And then I have that like level of perfectionism where I want to do it really well. And just, I'm going to keep trying to go instead of shutting it down or taking a break, or, you know, so it's kind of like learning yourself and how you receive information, because everybody receives information, right? Anybody can do this kind of work, or.
Yeah, I think anyone can do it. I feel like there's some of us that are, again, I feel like some of us that are more empathic, some of us that are more sensitive in some ways can really get a lot of mastery over the work too. I think the body is almost built that way to receive information, but I do believe that anyone can do it. And I believe that it's also, in some ways, it's like conditioning or going to the gym too, where, you know, we put so much expectation on ourselves of, oh, the first time I'm opening up the Akashic records, if I'm not getting anything, then it must mean that I don't have this gift. And as opposed to actually learning the process of how do I relax my body enough? How do I learn to trust the information that's coming to me?
You know, and how it's coming too.
Yeah.
You know, like I think the first time I heard somebody that channeled, because it is channeling essentially, yeah, right? Was Abraham Hicks. And she, it just seems like she just hears that, you know, she's clairaudient and just repeats things. And I think I was expecting it to happen in this certain way.
Yeah.
And when it didn't, I was like, oh, well, I guess I can't, you know?
So. It's so funny. When I first started, so I had taken the class and the woman very quickly at the place that I was working at, I was like, okay, great, you can read. And I was like, I don't know if I can read people. It's like, I've been training in the shamanic cranial sacral for years now at this point, and I don't know if I can just jump straight into reading because I don't want to be fraudulent and I'm scared of giving information to people. And the fascinating part to me was I think that actually having to read for other people accelerated my trust in myself around it, because I would end up giving information to people and they would burst into tears. And mm-hmm. It didn't fully make sense to me. But the only way that I could trust it fully was, this is a thought that's so outside of what I was thinking before that it must be an important thought. And so I actually have to trust myself enough to be able to speak it out loud. And it is a practice in self-trust. And I always tell people who get nervous about the Akashic Records, either getting a reading or reading it, is that you will know that in some ways it is being channeled through, because it's very kind, it's compassionate, it feels like there is a vibration to it or a love to it that, even though I consider myself kind and compassionate, that feels outside of myself. And like my sister, who's used to me because she's my sister, she was like, I can tell when you're in the records and versus just your intuition, because I experience you sometimes as my sister as being like pushy in your thoughts around like, oh, you should do this or you should do this. And mm-hmm. She's like, there's just a beautiful neutrality and depth that you bring through when you're reading the records that doesn't feel fully of you. And so it was like learning how to trust that process. And I would have moments where I would tell someone something that felt so scary to tell them, because I was like, I don't know if this is off or what.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when people are paying you very early on for the work. It's like you haven't, you know, the skill is still in development on some level. And I would be amazed at how that meant something. So the specificity of what I was saying meant nothing to me. And it also meant something to them too.
Right.
I
yeah.
think that I just feel like there was a reason for everything. And I feel like part of the work that I did in improv really was preparation for this. Because even in the energy work I was doing, I was like, oh, I have to trust myself. I have to trust that if I somehow want to go work on someone's feet, that there's a purpose to that, you know, as opposed to the mind getting in the way of it. It's like my intuition is very strong. And so learning how to not have the mind kill the intuition is part of the practice.
Right. And I'm curious, because I received a reading from you too, and I felt that level of compassion and just non-judgment. It was just like this pure, I don't even know how to describe it, just unconditional love.
Yeah.
And it feels like, you know, even though I'm really close with my family and things like that, and there's lots of love there, but this is just like this different type of feeling that you get. Like there's no judgment. There's no judgment. That's the thing that just keeps coming up. So like, I'm just curious, as I see that it's changed your life in ways because you are a healer and you do work doing this work for other people, but how did it help you heal yourself too? Like, what did it do for you?
Well, I'm still very much in the process of healing myself. I think that is a day-to-day thing.
And that never ends, does it?
No. I feel like at first, it's funny when I really got involved in therapy, like again in my late 20s, I feel like there was the first about 3 years in, I was like, well, am I done yet? It's like, I gotta be done at some point. And right. I remember being told, it's like, well, you're never done. And that was devastating to me at the time. I was like, this is BS. And then I think you settle into the process of, you know, I feel like at this point, there's a lot of that's been explored in my own consciousness, in my own psyche. And it's like, I'll circle back to the same issue, but from a higher perspective a lot of the time too. It's like, I can feel the healing that's happening, but it doesn't. If I'm to look at how the Akashic Records helps in that process, I think the Akashic Records gives me a deep understanding of the idea that really, truly, the things that I'm struggling with, there is purpose to, and that there's a lot of learning that's going on. And on a soul level, my soul loves it, no matter how painful it is in this lifetime. And I've had a lot of experiences of, you know, loss has been a really big teacher for me. I haven't lost anyone in terms of death close to me, but I've lost many things and projects and friendships. And, you know, my personality struggles with that. And I also see from doing this work who I've become out of that level of loss. Right. You know, I think one of the big things that my soul is working on in this lifetime is a sense of autonomy and what it means to live outside of needing other people to reflect back to me who I am. It's like I can be my own light. And so I think a lot of times in my life where I've wanted to have someone else act as that reflection or be that mirror for me or need that validation or need to be chosen in a certain way, that at times that's fallen apart. And I think that that is I believe that's a soul choice for me in this lifetime. And that is so I can actually really truly speak my truth and stand on my own two feet and work through some of the, I mean, I have some codependence and some neediness and, you know, those are the things that I could label it in the like therapeutic realm. But I'll say this. One of the things that I believe most that I've learned from the Akashic Records too, is that the soul a lot of times will drop itself into the opposite circumstances of what it wants to learn in this lifetime. So
wait, can I process what you just said? The soul will drop itself into the opposite circumstances of what it wants to learn. Is that what you said?
Yeah. You can think of it like this. It's like, if we're choosing our lifetimes, which can be hard for people, can struggle with that idea in general.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I never would have chose this.
No. It's like, and I very much struggle with the idea, you know, still in myself from my like human perspective of like, I don't, suffering and cruelty and stuff, it still doesn't fully make sense to my system. But I believe that on a soul level, we'll choose things that in some ways challenge us into what the soul is capable of becoming in a lifetime too. So the soul will drop itself in or decide to choose an early life where a lot of things feel very disempowering because the soul is moving to the desire for a sense of empowerment.
I gotcha. Yeah.
And I think, you know, we can look at lifetimes. There's something to me that's actually calming about the idea of having multiple lifetimes instead of a singular lifetime too, because it's like the soul, it doesn't necessarily mean that the soul, like it's neat and tidy and the soul completely achieved this thing, but the soul did a lot of learning around that particular place that it was looking to expand in, you know? So I think that there's something very calming to me about the idea of, instead of framing things through success and failure, it's like, well, my soul is just learning right now. You know, so that thing that I wanted that fell apart or broke down that I didn't get is actually falling apart for a reason. And there's a lot for me to learn inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
As painful as it is, that there's always an opportunity to learn, you know, because I think even saying like, something happens, everything happens for a reason, is also very triggering too. It triggers my personality as well.
Sure. Yeah.
Because it's like, again, I can't fully understand tragedy.
Right.
In that way. But I do think that there's always an opportunity for expansion. And I see now in retrospect some of the things that fell apart as giving me the potential, like some of the creative projects that I really wanted in a certain way. It's like I'm getting closer all the time. So instead of being like, well, that didn't work out, it's like, well, this is bringing me more into my singular voice. This is allowing me to be more truthful in the way that I express myself. You know, this is bringing me into a deeper sense of leadership instead of depending on someone else too. And so it's helpful to me. Again, I think I'm always looking for hope in the world. I'm probably a hope addict.
Yeah.
Of like, what's the hope inside of this? What's the potential inside of it? Because I personally can't survive in that space of here's just all the things that are wrong. Like it's too much. It's too much for my psyche.
Right. And I think that gives me a lot of comfort, just knowing that you do kind of have this cosmic team and things are happening, even if they don't feel like they're happening for you, they are in some way. So, and it's funny because when I also kind of went on this journey when things felt like they were falling apart for me and I just didn't know what I was doing anymore. And every time I think I know, understand things, like I find out I'm wrong. But I read this article about how it's very common when people have these really eventful times in their lives where things are kind of negatively impacted, how they tend to shift towards magical thinking is what it was a research article about that specifically, because I'm like, why? Maybe I am crazy that like, why am I like going off on this journey that's completely different from how I was raised or, you know, but it has given me a lot of insight and compassion for myself. And also I think that hope that, and I guess I even would want to go beyond hope, that it's that things are like really just working out the way that they have intended. Like there's always something to learn from it. I guess that's hopeful. But yeah, that even though I'm like looking at this research and it makes me seem like it made it seem like it was not a healthy thing to do. But for me, it has been very healthy on an internal level. And I don't really want to live in a place that there isn't that kind of magic and guidance and love and support. So I would rather choose this than that hopelessness that comes with trauma and tragedy and the things that we don't really understand, I guess.
I feel like too, because I get triggered by the science like that puts it at odds with like magical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think that we need magic in some ways, you know, in the same way that we need so many other things that are uplifting too. Mm-hmm. It's the reason that we have the arts and not just the sciences as well, is to kind of understand ourselves on a deeper level. And I think that that's the opportunity in it it's like, to me, and I notice this, it's like when I start feeling what's happening for me emotionally, when I start moving back into a space of like, what's the potential that's still there, I can feel the comfort in my own system around it. I think it's limiting to just call it magical thinking when it's like, no, the soul, I don't think the soul survives well in a state of hopelessness.
Right.
You know, and I think that there is, you know, that's why everything feels to me imbalanced. It's like, well, if I'm just moving into a space of fantasy because I don't actually want to feel what's happening for me, then that's one space. But why can't we do both things? Why can't I actually feel what's going on? And through that feeling, let that lead me into the next space that I'm growing into, right. You know, or the next possible potential for what's there. And maybe I'm just misunderstanding the article, but I think.
No, I don't think you are. I'm in a medical field, yeah. But it's also, I'm in a profession that honors the spiritual part of each person. So yeah. It's like this weird space to be in, because I think a lot of therapists in my profession kind of push that aside just because it's not in the medical model. Most of our people that we see are being treated for specific medical things, you know?
Right.
And so it's part of my profession to incorporate that level of spirituality, but a lot of times that gets kind of pushed aside, and I'm guilty of that as well. But yeah. I think there's a reason why I was attracted to this profession, and that it's like a very deep, I mean, our whole thing is that you're looking for meaning, finding meaningful activities for people.
Right.
And I think that's what drew me to it. So like when I went through this weird challenge with what do I do next, like that spirituality piece was in it already.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know. I'm not making sense right now. I know, but it makes sense in my head.
I feel like it makes sense.
Okay.
You know, what's interesting is that my mom, after doing, it's interesting to even look at the evolution of, she went from kind of like traditional therapy into doing a lot of different stuff. Like she's trained in EMDR, which helps bring up the subconscious, you know, by stimulating both hemispheres of the brain. And has recently, her and my dad have recently, they actually took a course through Stanford University, like got very into the beginnings of meditation. And to see the difference that meditation makes, you know, after years of analysis is really fascinating to me, you know, and I think in some ways the medical model, it's like there's so much room for us to grow. There's so many things that we don't understand. And we are really just starting to look at, again, the mind, body, spirit model, right. As looking at them all together.
Yeah, there's a huge shift right now, definitely, in acceptance for that. I'm super stoked on that. But at the same time, the things that we talked about in this interview will be hard for some people to swallow, because it does seem pretty wild, you know? There's this record and the ethers and past lives and interdimensional, time's not a thing, you know, like that stuff is so fascinating to me. But at the same time, I feel like this internal struggle with even talking about it publicly. Yeah.
It's funny. I feel like I do it professionally and I still have an internal struggle. I think in the way that, you know, the comedian in me is also the skeptic. And I think also, you know, that's the part that's like, am I going crazy or is this really happening?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's a hurdle with it because it's not in mainstream consciousness yet, you know, and we're really actually starting to shift around it. But I think that that's the hard part about compartmentalizing all of these things of like, this is science and this is how science is, you know, and this is spirituality and this is how spirituality is. This is why I love some of the scientists out there who are starting to bridge the gap between the two, you know, like someone like Dr. Joe Dispenza, who's a neuroscientist, who's looking at, who's actually measuring the brain's activity and seeing the shift in all of these different things and is starting to connect those two worlds, because I don't feel like they should live in a totally compartmentalized space. And I think anytime that we're introducing something that people are skeptical of too, it's hard to digest. And I think the thing that I always tell people is, I mean, first of all, if you're doing any sort of spiritual work with someone, you want to make sure that it's the right person for you. Because I think people get turned off to these different realms, even with therapists too. It's like, oh, I don't like therapy. And it's like, do you not like therapy or did you not like that therapist? And I think that the skeptical mind comes in wanting to disprove what we can't fully understand.
Right.
And so it's like, to me, I always ask people, I'm like, are you willing to live in a space of curiosity though? You know, because at some point in history, we didn't understand so many different things that were going to happen. So am I willing to suspend that level of skepticism to become curious? Because I've had people who have been completely skeptical. I had a really close friend who, I mean, she didn't believe in any of this stuff. And then she had an experience where she got Reiki energy work and it just blew her mind. She was like, I had no idea. You know, I felt like it was like putting glasses on for the first time. It's like, I didn't see that. And all of a sudden that makes sense to me because I've had a firsthand experience of it, you know? And I think that that's the way that we start to break some of these things down is, and they are starting, you know, they use Reiki in hospitals now. Mm-hmm. Like it's fascinating to see how we're starting to bridge that gap right now. But because I think there's so much skepticism and judgment, it's hard not to get a little bit fearful when we're talking about these things too.
Right. And I grew up kind of religious too.
Yeah.
So, you know, the first time I learned about some of this stuff, I was a little bit scared.
Yeah, totally.
Like maybe this isn't a kind energy or, you know, like that, just stay away from that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That kind of idea.
That's my rule of thumb with people too, is if you're going to someone, like I don't resonate in going to someone who gives you a message of fear in this mm-hmm. work too.
Right.
It's like, if the message is too fearful, I feel like that is an interpretation of the person who's bringing through the message,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's not that there's not, I understand there's scary things in the world too, but to me, when a message is very pure, it comes with that vibrational purity in some ways. It's like there's a lightness and a kindness and a calmness. Even when I've had to tell people hard things inside of the records, but the way that it gets delivered too is so compassionate that it feels like a deep experience of really truly being seen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's my work also in the world. It's like, if I'm going to do any sort of healing work, or if I'm going to be a channel for anything, then I need to be really responsible to myself of doing my own self-healing so that my stuff is not being projected onto other people to the best of my ability.
Right.
You know,
and go ahead.
I was going to say, I think so much of the time, even in the world of therapy too, is that you have a lot of therapists who haven't done all of the self-healing that they need to do, you know, so that's going to come into the practice. It's going to come into the relationship. So It's like, that's why it's important for anyone who's doing healing work to really do the work on themselves. I feel like I have a PhD in myself right now.
Right. Yeah. But a lot of people don't, they have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. I shouldn't say they have no idea, but that commitment to know yourself,
yeah,
I think is really important. And some people don't necessarily go down that path.
Yeah.
You know, it's always somebody else's fault or, you know, I don't know.
I think that's a hard one to get stuck into, is the cycle of blame as
right.
well. And it's not, you know, I believe in holding people accountable for things. It's like, but how do I make sure, am I really able to do that deep dive into myself to figure out what is someone else's and what's mine, you know, or what choices I'm making a lot of the time that are recreating these experiences for myself.
Right.
And that's not victim blaming. It's like, it's self-responsibility to me.
Yeah. And to me, it's empowering to take some of the responsibility in understanding the dynamics of things, I guess.
Right.
I do have one more question that I ask everybody, and that is, do you feel free in your life now?
I feel on the path to freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a hard one to answer, because I think for me, freedom feels like the ability to truly be myself
mm-hmm.
in the world, regardless of what other people think. I feel like that's true kind of emotional freedom. And I feel like I'm getting there. I don't know if I'll even get there fully in this lifetime, but I feel like I am miles ahead of where I was a decade ago or a decade before that.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I think that you just, there's always something more to learn and another way to grow into a new level of like feeling free in your life and your body and your health and your relationships. And, you know, there's so many dimensions to that question. I don't know why I still ask it, but I always get different answers and it's always really interesting. But I am realizing it's like just kind of a state of mind, you know?
Yeah.
That I think we're, I mean, I kind of strive for it just because that's one of my main values, is just to have that level of freedom and flexibility and ability to be curious and kind of explore things. So that's why I'm hyper focused on it. So, but thank you so much for doing this interview and for all of the work that you're doing and sharing with everybody. If people are resonating with this and they want to learn more about you, where's the best place for them to find you?
I have a website right now. It's called sheholdsthelight.com, which you can find me there right now, although I'm in the process of switching over my website. And then I have a podcast that's coming out called The Magic of Falling Apart. And that should be up.
Oh, I love that title.
Oh, thank you. That should be up in the next month or so too.
Okay.
On all the major podcasting sites.
But you're also doing your school, or?
Yes. I have a school called the Aurora School of Light, and I teach intuitive classes out of there. So I teach Akashic classes. There'll be energy work classes coming soon. And also, one of the things that I'm working on in the world too is integrating spirituality and creativity. So one of my greatest joys working with people too is how to help. I work with a lot of creatives, and I think sometimes when we're on a creative path or a very individualized path, it can feel scary out there. So I really love working with people in the process of that shift. And so there'll be classes around that as well. I actually just recorded a podcast with her, but I have a client who had come to me initially, and the Akashic Records had talked to her about being a documentarian when she was in college. And she followed that path, actually, and ended up filming an entire documentary about going down to South America with her friend who had cystic fibrosis. And they ended up working with different shamans down there to see if they could cure it. And then they ended up coming back, and one of my favorite things that we ever did was we worked with the project in the Akashic Records too. And anyways, they did a showing of it and got picked up for Netflix. So it's fun for me to be on, you know, I taught for years for Second City too. So I try and integrate those gifts together to work with a spiritual approach to creative work. So that's another thing that I do, and there should be a class coming out with that.
That's awesome. That sounds amazing.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you for having me on too.
Oh, this thank you for doing this. Oh boy. That is probably my favorite definition of freedom that I've heard and just resonated with me so deeply. To truly be my authentic self in the world, regardless of what other people think. I just really love that. And I so appreciated how open she is and was with her healing story. And she brings that into her classes too. It was such an amazing experience to be able to learn from her and the space that she created for us. But I 100% would recommend for anybody interested in having an Akashic Record reading done, you should go ahead and give yourself that gift. That was amazing. And I'll put Kat's website in the show notes for you, so check her out. And I just want to thank you for joining us. I really appreciate you guys and all of your support of this podcast. Thanks so much for being here. See you in a couple weeks.